Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, we'll talk to Jesse Terry and Alex Wong here in just 1 second, but here's a question for you. Do you feel younger than you appear? Under eye bags, crow's feet, and wrinkles, they often add years to our appearance. And oh my God, that sting when someone thinks you're 10 years older than you actually are. It's crushing to the ego and the confidence level plummets. But let's talk about a quick and easy fix. Plexiderm. It's a clinically studied topical serum that visibly eliminates wrinkles, crow's feet, fine lines, and under eye bags in just a matter of minutes. It's exactly what you need to win the battle against Father Time and restore your confidence. And if you don't believe it, don't worry about it. I didn't believe it either until I tried it. I did the test and 10 minutes, the fine lines around my eyes were gone. I couldn't believe it. It was a miracle. Go to triplexiderm.com. Use my promo code SEXYLIBERAL. That's two words, SEXYLIBERAL, for 50% off plus an additional $10 off your first canister of Plexiderm. That's right, 50% off plus an extra $10 off. This offer is also available by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning the code SEXYLIBERAL. Plexiderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit triplexiderm.com today. Use the code SEXYLIBERAL at checkout. That's triplexiderm.com, code SEXYLIBERAL. And now, let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Zeska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, November 13, 2019, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Zeska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. My guests today are a pair of musicians, Jesse Terry and Alex Wong, who just released an EP titled Kivalina to raise awareness of the tragic impact of the climate crisis on a small village in Alaska and the Native Alaskans who live there. You might recognize Jesse Terry from the Bob Zeska Show. Songs like Dangerous Times and Woken the Wildflowers have become staples on the show. And Alex Wong is an accomplished record producer and songwriter based in Nashville, Tennessee. Working together on the Kivalina album has resulted in a musical triumph, bringing the climate crisis down to an emotional, human level. All right, let's chat with Jesse and Alex. Well, I got to say right out at the start here, it's a huge honor to speak to you both. Jesse, you've become like a requested favorite on my podcast. So officially, thank you for the privilege of letting me play your music on the show. And now there's this Kivalina EP, which is chills inducing. It's an EP, but it's a concept album. Sad, uplifting. And I strongly urge everyone to support this record. I got links in the description for to purchase it, to support it. We're going to come back to the EP in a second. But first, Jesse, tell me about the village of Kivalina and its significance related to the climate crisis.
Well, Alex brought it to my attention, really, just on a regular co-writing day in Nashville. And he said, he was pretty much just like, man, I've been reading this story about this village that's going underwater by the year 2025, and it's pretty heavy, and I'm not sure if I even want to write today. I'm pretty sure that was kind of the conversation, and we, wow. You know, we started drinking a lot of coffee, as we always do, and maybe crying a little bit, as we always do when we write. But No, seriously, we got into it, and before long, some music was really helpful and really healing. Yeah. And that allowed us to kind of express things that that words, you know, when words don't suffice.
Alex, so tell me, I mean, Jesse just threw this bombshell thing in the middle of all of this, that Kivalina, this village in Alaska, is going to be underwater by 2025. Give us some of the background of how the climate crisis is specifically affecting this particular village and the indigenous people who live there.
Yeah, well, I am no expert, but I was reading, as Jesse was mentioning, I had found an article that day, and I was just kind of reading it, and I kind of got lost in the story about, you know, I think the headline of the article was, you know, the first one of the first North American towns to be like a casualty of climate change. And what they meant by that was that there was this village, Kivalina, in Alaska, that along with other villages kind of at that same latitude, which are basically sinking, or I guess the sea is rising around them. And, you know, in I think the article was written a few years ago, they were saying 10 years out. Now it's probably 7 or 8 years.
Jesus.
It's just going to be uninhabitable because the seasonal storms come in, and each year it keeps getting worse, as well as the permafrost is not as dependable as it used to be. So their economies of hunting and sort of way of life are starting to not be as dependable. So they're kind of, you know, facing this fight or flight, like one of our songs actually called Fight or Flight, but that's sort of how this article was kind of framing it, that they were just at this decision of what to do, you know. And that's what really got me. And as Jesse and I started talking about it more, it was just such a, it was powerful because it was not so exotic as, you know, not that images of, you know, polar bears floating on icebergs and glaciers falling into the ocean can be pretty powerful, but they're also really abstract to someone like me who grew up in, you know, the Bay Area and has never lived in an area where I've even seen any of these things with my own eyes. So sometimes that would almost go over my head. Yeah. And this story really nailed me because they were talking about these everyday things. They were talking about, well, where do we, you know, our kids are in the middle of their school year. What do we do? Where do we send our kids to school? And questions like, you know, if our grandparents are buried in the cemetery and the cemetery goes underwater, what do we do? What does that mean? How do we, you know, what are the practical ways that we deal with that? And that's just started spinning us out into a lot of bigger questions that we don't tend to think about, like identity. And you know, we're so used to being tied to a piece of land as part of our identity. And if that land literally disappears, does a part of our identity disappear? So it just started to kind of blow our minds more and more as we got deeper into it from an emotional standpoint, which is kind of the only place that I think we can, you know, connect in a legitimate way to the story, because we're not being climate experts, not being from the region. It was just on an emotional level that we felt this connection and resonation with what they were going through.
This is a matter of centuries of cultural heritage potentially being buried here, just within not just our lifetimes, but within the next decade, for God's sake. And isn't part of the crisis in Kivalina specifically the fact that they sustain themselves on whale hunting and they require the sea ice in order to go hunting, and now the sea ice is disappearing? Right? Is that what's one of the specific things going on?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
As far as we learned, and then to add further complication to it, they had been sort of moved around by our own government, based on sort of relocation, you know, to the government's specific needs at the time or whatever, and so some of it is complicated by sort of these interests. Like they actually went into this lawsuit suing ExxonMobil because of the sort of, you know, the willful kind of destruction of their land and environment.
Yeah, I mean, see, it seems like a familiar story. We do this to indigenous people a lot, whether it's Native Americans.
We're real good at it.
Yeah. We've done this to Native Hawaiians. We've done this to certainly Native Alaskans, too, based on what you're saying here. Is it possible for us to get to Kivalena, or is it something, is it more of a secluded village that isn't really accessible from the outside? I mean, I guess the point of what I'm trying to ask here is, is this something that we can see up close and in person, the fact that the, you know, this is a direct result of the climate crisis, beyond hurricanes, beyond some of the things that we typically expect? Is this something that we can walk up to and go, there, that's the climate crisis happening right here?
Yeah, I do think, I mean, you can get there, yes. It's not necessarily on a United flight or something, but there,
yeah,
you know, it is definitely possible to get there. And we've met a few people who've come from that region or who've been there. It's a very, very, very visible thing. And actually, you know, what I think really hit us was how it made us think about all the places in the lower 48 that are also where it's very plain to see these changes. Like there are islands in the Chesapeake Bay that are going to also be underwater in I think less than a decade as well.
Yep.
Ironically, some of the strongest climate denier strongholds, as far as I understand, but I mean, in Miami and all these places where I think it's very obvious. So I think we wanted to kind of speak to the everyday part of this massive existential thing.
And Jesse, this isn't just about Kivalena, is it? There's a million other Kivalenas that are potentially.
I think the inspiring or really difficult thing about Kivalena was hearing these really personal stories of 400 villagers. But Alex and I had the honor of going out to Berkeley, California to perform at an environmental conference not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I got picked up from the airport by a scientist and the whole drive, we talked about it. And he said, you know, this is not a new thing. It doesn't get a lot of press coverage, but like, you know, there's a huge part of the Korean Peninsula that, you know, millions of people have been displaced. And, you know, pretty much on a daily basis now, I'm getting some kind of forward from Alex or my manager or my publicist, you know, with a story about more people that are being displaced. So it's just something that, you know, like, it's something that I think, unfortunately is becoming a reality to people everywhere, and and we just thought it would be an important thing to write about. And it seems like since we released it and since we wrote it, it seems to be becoming more dire and much more common that we keep on getting these links forwarded to us.
Yeah. Did you have a sense of urgency as you're recording? Like, I mean, every second counts in all of this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
It's sort of, one of our songs is called 10 More Years, and it's already, an outdated song.
Yeah. 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 You know, we knew that when we wrote it too, but we were, there was a quote, most of these songs had, you know, an origin. I mean, it's about a fictional couple in a real situation. Mm-hmm. And this is the situation, but a lot of the songs were derived from interviews with the villagers, and that was a line, a quote from one of the interviews, I believe. You know, we should have more than 10 more years. Because they've lost, I think, at least half of their land mass already, and
God.
Yeah, and as the, you know, so, and Mother Nature is not, you know, she won't be defeated, you know. I mean, like, they've put up big walls, and they've put up, which are in some of the songs, is in that song Nowhere that you played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've they've put up sandbags and stuff. Like, it's not going to last forever. You know, that kind of stuff doesn't work forever. You know, we can see that. I live in New England. I mean, I can see that in Cape Cod. You know, people are worried about losing their multi-million-dollar beachfront homes because of erosion there. You know, so it's
You know, that actually brings up an interesting concern, which is that those beachfront homes, Donald Trump's place in Mar-a-Lago, is going to be well protected by, you know, seawalls and everything else they can construct there. But smaller towns, obviously people who don't have the means to mitigate the effects of the climate crisis, they're going to be screwed. I mean, half of their land mass, half of Kivalina is gone. Is that right? It's just, I want to make sure we're perfectly clear on that. It's gone.
I believe I should probably Google it to be 100% sure. I certainly don't want to be like, I should get a perfectly good source for that.
Well, I mean, it's
100% sure, but
Not something that suddenly it's January 1st, 2025, and then like a snap, it disappears. This is a gradual overtaking of it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, by now.
It certainly is a gradual, it's certainly a gradual thing, and they've, you know, been noticing it, and that's why they're talking about it. And obviously they've noticed the, you know, the ice melting, which affects this little inlet that they had, which was very still. We protected them from storms and also created this space where they could hunt the whales. So now the whales are all over the place, and it's affecting them in economic ways. And it's affecting them with poverty, which, you know, we know leads to alcoholism and all kinds of things. I mean, a lot of things are tied in with economics and, you know, your way of life. So they're going through something that's very difficult, and certainly something that I want to see reversed, you know, not just in my lifetime, but I have a 15-month-old daughter, and I want her to have a world to live in. And there's so much beauty where I live. I live on the coast of New England, you know, and it's like Alex said, you know, being from the Bay Area, like this isn't that far removed from us, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that it hits home in a very powerful way.
Are the villagers of Kivalina aware of your project? Are they aware of the EP, or is this something that you eventually plan to maybe bring up to them and let them know that there are people here in the lower 48 who are striving to help protect them from this impending crisis?
Yeah, we've started to try to connect with people in the region, not just that village, but some neighboring villages, and we've had some help from some people who are like liaisons between the tribes and our government, and just, you know, people who have been sort of fans who are also connected to that, who are trying to help us. But I think we have a long way to go with spreading the word and kind of figuring out how we can help.
Yeah,
we were moved to do this project, but I don't think we thought beyond expressing what we were feeling about it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the many things that keeps me awake at night is the lack of public urgency on this issue. I mean, from my personal experience, I don't know if you guys are seeing the same thing, but whenever I write about the climate crisis, it mostly gets ignored. I think partly because, and I think this is a major, major prong of why this is happening, I think people are afraid to face the catastrophic news. There isn't really a lot of uplifting news when you're talking about the climate crisis. It's an impending disaster that's not only about the land and the beachfronts and the villages, it's about the people who exist in those areas and the people who are going to be affected. As you say, poverty, alcoholism sets in, disease, sickness, and then suddenly we're losing entire populations of people. We've got a refugee crisis that will be on the horizon. I think people look at that stuff and they go, oh my God, well, what can I do about that? I mean, I'm recycling my garbage. Right. I'm driving an electric vehicle. What more can I? This is such a disaster. I mean, do you think music ultimately is going to cut through all of that and ultimately trigger maybe a greater sense of urgency? Is that, I mean, Alex, is that kind of the goal behind this?
I wouldn't say it was a concrete like we weren't shooting necessarily for that, but I do think that music, you know, in the same way that I think living your, you know, it's like if one person drives an electric car or stops eating meat or whatever, it's, you know, statistically that's doing basically nothing. But what I think it does do is inspire the people around that person and cause ripple effects. And, you know, when they go out to dinner with their friends, maybe their friends eat less meat and then their friends eat, you know, it's that sort of a power. And I think music, that's how I feel about music too, is it's a soft power, I guess you could say. But it really, yeah, I guess just to inspire without being preached to, I think that's always the trick with stuff like this. It's tricky to write about these kinds of subjects, but trying to express a real emotion that I think, you know, people, I think they're, one of the reasons they do kind of hide their heads is because it is so massive. It's so unmanageable, and it requires confronting, like, wow, I have to personally change these major things in my life right now. And that's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Doing a project like this, where it's sort of speaking to a different part of the, you know, it's speaking more to the heart than the brain, might, you know, I'm hoping that it's something that is a little bit more of a, like, encouraging or inspiring rather than like a shaming or stress inducing.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think one of the most important aspects of this album, just listening to the songs, there's a personal emotional aspect to it. That is, I think it combines the melancholy of looking at the degree of the crisis with bringing everything down to a human level, where I think a lot of times when we talk about the climate crisis, a lot of science, obviously that needs to be part of it. But I think, you know, charts and graphs and Al Gore pointing to the graphs probably doesn't do as much as a song that I think cuts right to the heart of the listener, the hearts of the listeners, whether it's a live audience or whether it's listening to the album. I mean, Jesse, I know you were going to jump in a second ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like Alex said, the first step to songwriting or creating anything is to be passionate about what you're writing about. So we didn't have a plan as we were writing. We just wanted to write stuff that was real and of course write stuff that was good and sing good and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's the first part of any of this stuff to get any notice.
Sure.
But, you know, I think speaking to what you guys were talking about, I think a little bit about change and a little bit about what we can do and how the music can affect people. You know, I don't want to condemn anyone because I could easily be condemned. I mean, I tour for a living. I'm flying, you know, I'm leaving tomorrow to go play shows all over the Northeast on Monday. I'm flying to the UK to play shows. I mean, these are things that are polluting the environment, you know, that are, so I really think that things have to come from the top down in some ways, and hopefully that America can be an example for the world, because not everyone has the means. I mean, I can't buy an electric guitar. I just bought an electric guitar. I can't buy an electric car right now.
Yeah.
And play my show in Minneapolis from Connecticut. You know, I can't do that. I can't. You know, it would be very difficult for me to even fit my stuff in a hybrid. I mean, I've looked into larger hybrid vehicles. They're not only very expensive, but they're not cutting down that much on the miles per gallon. So I think that the big ideas in, you know, I hate talking politics, but like the big ideas in politics, I feel like it's come to a point where it has to come from that. And somebody has to have a really great plan, because, you know, when I go to Texas, I might be playing to some really lovely people that happen to feed their family, you know, from the oil industry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think condemning those people is the right thing to do. I think giving, and I'm not saying that we were, I'm just saying that I think having a plan for people to transition to a new way and to make it economically, you know, sustainable. Because like our, you know, our first instinct as human beings and as parents is to, you know, pay the bills and survive and put food on the table and mm-hmm. take care of our kids. And there, I mean, don't you agree? I mean, there has to be a plan where I think we're the beacon for the world, and also we're able to transition into sustainable energies, and we start cleaning up this crisis, and we start creating jobs in that sector that are, you know, and just being on the forefront of innovation. I feel like that's the key to me.
The issue of economics, the issue of personal finances versus trying to be aware of what's going on and trying to do your part in accomplishing some sort of change along these lines. I mean, there's lots of ways to do it. You don't have to buy a hybrid car. You don't have to recycle every piece of recyclable packaging that you get on a daily basis at the grocery store or wherever. But you can also buy carbon offsets. You can also do things that will help along these lines. And I think producing this album goes a long way to making up for the fact that, you know, I think all three of us use air travel and we all have cars that burn gasoline, but we also do things to make up for that. And I think it's a matter of finding that balance where we're all doing our part and then also maintaining our reasonable, you know, lifestyles and our own personal budgets. I think that makes perfect sense. And I think offering people those options goes a long way to helping the medicine go down.
Yeah, and I think that the people that are in power, I mean, they just want to stay in power. I mean, that seems to be the overriding, I think, for most politicians, you know. So, yeah. I saw it in the UK just on this last tour I was at. Like, people are starting to eat vegan over there a lot, and you go into some 12th century UK pub that, you know, you're expecting to just see like pork and a slab of like beef on the menu, and there's like here's our vegan menu, you know what I mean? And you're like, what? Like, it's because, you know, vegan, in my experience, the vegan movement is much bigger in the UK right now than the US, and almost every place has a vegan menu that I went to on this last tour. And so people, you know, things do change, and if we were creating change, you know, some people say, oh, you know, we'd need every country in the world to cut carbon and to make all these changes to do it. Well, you know, maybe they would follow suit if America did, you know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
So someone has to be like a grown up and make some big changes and have some big ideas that make sense.
Are you guys intending to do any shows together? I know, Jesse, you've got a long tour ahead of you. I was just looking at your dates before we started here. And Alex, you've got a couple of shows lined up too. Do you intend to get together for a few of those and perform the songs from the album? Or is there a plan in place to tour this EP?
We would love to do that. And we're talking about ways we can do that next year with both of our crazy schedules.
Yeah, right.
We love doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing concrete, but as soon as we are able to plan something, we will get the word out for sure.
You know, just getting into the project itself, you know, one of the things that caught my mind right away when I first got the EP was the remake of Dangerous Times. It was a Jesse song. It was one of your songs, Jesse, that was re-recorded for this project. It's got a whole new vibe to it, you know, different from the original version. Walk me through the writing and recording process. I mean, did you guys both bring songs and ideas to the table, or was it a pure collaboration where you're both sitting in the room and saying, let's do this? How did that?
No, that song is actually a co-write with Alex. This project was actually written. I think we probably finished it, you know, 2015, 2016, right, Alex? Right around then, and then
something like that.
And we had some different projects kind of coming out. I had like my solo album, and I asked Alex if I could. I just love Dangerous Times so much. I wanted to do a different kind of version of it. So really, the version that Alex and I did was the first version.
Oh, wow.
And I did a second version. I don't believe I even played the version that Alex and I did to my producer that I was making my album with, because I didn't want it to be influenced. I don't think I did. I really wanted it to be its own thing, but I just love the song so much. And I thought it connected to so many different things. And of course, people that hear it think it's about different things. You know, hear people that heard it on my Stargazer record, nobody said, oh, that's about the climate crisis, right? You know, I mean, so songs can mean so many different things. And so it was really,
would you prefer to leave it up to interpretation, or did you have something in mind when you first, when you guys first sat down, Alex, specifically, you can add to this, when you first started to write this, whether it was with the lyrics or the overall vibe of the song, the concept of the song, was that, what was the intention with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just, you're saying, like, songs are funny because they, you know, one of the most beautiful things about them is that they can mean different things at different times, different to different people. And like this song is a good example. I actually had written the chorus of the song a couple years before Jesse and I got together, and it was just a chorus, and it never found a home. And it actually came from emotionally a place that we were trying to kind of mine with this song. Like, the way we sketched out the album was almost like the, like, I don't know, like the five stages of acceptance or something, where there were these sort of, like, you know, each song represents sort of a different emotion of going through what we're kind of imagining the struggle to be, and as well as, like, the personal struggle with the two fictitious characters. And you know, this one was kind of this one and Nowhere were kind of trying to express sort of this height of anger and frustration and just feeling helpless, but with a lot of anger, existential anger, and also anger towards sort of the these powers that be that really, you know, don't give a crap about them.
Yeah.
And just sort of being pawns in this, you know, bigger, you know, scenario. And so that chorus came back around because it was also written from kind of this uneasiness and, like, this feeling of anxiety. And I had that feeling, and that's it. And I didn't have the rest of what I wanted to save. So it just sort of sat there for, as a lot of scraps often do, sit on my phone or whatever. and so, yeah, so it's funny. It's like things just find a home when they're supposed to. And this one, you know, I played played the chorus for Jesse, and we kind of connected to it in a different way and started fleshing out this song, because it finally had a context.
We'll get back to our conversation with Alex and Jesse here in just one second. But first, I have to tell you, it has been a couple of years since I had my teeth cleaned. I've never actually successfully whitened my teeth. Dentists cost a bundle out of pocket. Teeth whitening trays are sloppy and expensive, and they burn my gums. Teeth whitening strips cost a fortune, and I barely notice any difference. But the holidays are coming. Office parties, family gatherings, all those cringeworthy pics of me smiling with my discolored, coffee-stained teeth. But not me. Not this year. I'm going to have sparkling, pearly white teeth because I'm holding my fresh box of Power Swabs. You never really whitened until you've whitened with Power Swabs. They're clinically proven to whiten an average of 2 shades in the first 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Power Swabs never leave my teeth and gums all sore and sensitive like other whitening strips, and it's totally safe and effective on all dental work. If you're not happy, Power Swabs are backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. You need to try Power Swabs, and you will not believe how much whiter your teeth will be in just 5 minutes. I got a great deal for you. Go to buypowerswabs.com. Again, buypowerswabs.com. Use the code SEXY, S-E-X-Y, for 40% off, an additional $10 off, plus a free quick stick. Yeah, that's right. 40% off plus $10 off plus a free quick stick. Or you can call 1-800-668-1749 and use my code SEXY. That's buypowerswabs.com, code SEXY. Visit buypowerswabs.com today.
The Bob Seska Show. ashes that crackle at night. Look around, a shelter is gone. The ice is too thin to wander upon. Yeah, the ice is too thin to wander upon. Dangerous times, dangerous times. I never thought I'd live to see. These are dangerous times, dangerous times. Grab hold of me, grab hold of me. These are dangerous times, dangerous times.
I mean, the thing that strikes me so much about the chorus of Dangerous Times is its vulnerability, the sense that the characters are recognizing the danger and then looking for some sort of nurturing, someone to hold on to through that danger. The togetherness of it is both, it's both sad and also at the same time it is there's a warmth to it too, and that overarching sense of being vulnerable to forces that are beyond our control, I think is an extraordinary piece of work right there. The emotions that are conveyed in just those small sections of a broader song, just incredible. I heard the Stargazer version before I heard the, which now I now understand to be the original version on the EP. And in both cases, it's the same. So hats off to both of you for conveying that. Just an amazing piece
Thank
of work.
You. I've never successfully, well, I don't like co-writing it. Generally, as a just a general rule, I happen to really love writing with Alex, and these songs flowed out pretty quickly. And we had a couple like three-way writes with a wonderful artist named Sierra Noble as well, who just happened to be living. She was living at Alex's house, and she's a brilliant artist. And wow. we were like, come on, you know, like it. And so that was really cool as well, because I love Sierra. But yeah, like I think the thing with co-writing is just everyone's really honest. Everyone's really, when it's working, everyone's really vulnerable and open and feels comfortable throwing out everything. And also just being aware of knowing when someone's really connecting and someone's really receiving some stuff from their antenna, and letting them kind of drive the ship for a little while, if that makes sense. You know,
yeah.
Like there's some songs where I can definitely remember bringing it to Alex and saying, "Hey, I really love this melody and this chord progression. Like, what do you think?" And then there's some songs where I definitely remember Alex just having like the majority of the feel and the vibe, and I was just there to bounce stuff off of, or maybe work help with a chorus or it's an ebb and flow, you know, and that's how it should be. Like, we're just thinking about what's best for the song and what's best, like what's conveying the emotions the best. It's not about our feelings or our you know what I mean, like our personal feelings. Like,
sure,
obviously we respect each other so much, and I'm a huge fan. So like, if I said to Alex, "Hey, I like this more than the other thing," it's not, you know, we know that it's not personal. It's about this. It's about the song.
Yeah, just a broader question as far as the current music recording process, where you're putting together albums, putting together EPs, maybe even in some cases putting together singles. And, you know, just ensconcing myself in the indie music scene, especially over the past year, I'm extremely curious about how these things get started in terms of planning. Like, are audiences still consuming like full length albums, like 12 song albums, or are audiences more interested in just picking up a song that they like and making their own playlists and so on using the different platforms? The paradigm has entirely changed over our collective lifetimes, and it's a whole new world of marketing music out there. Alex, yes. How is that? How do you set about planning for something like this, knowing that audiences are extraordinarily different than they were even 10 years ago?
I mean, honestly, I think one, you can't to a certain extent. I mean, I think you just have to do the thing that turns you on as an artist. And yeah. I think anytime I've ever tried to like second guess the market or the, you know, the some hypothetical audience group, it's always fallen flat. And I think people are very sensitive to energies of, you know, the things of pieces of art. Like, if you truly love something and you've infused it with this energy of excitement, of curiosity, of, you know, I think people pick up on those things. And then on the flip side, I think if, you know, when songs are written by a focus group or like planned out to within an inch of their life in terms of like the rollout, I sometimes think that people can sense that also. But I don't think there's a right or wrong. Like, I do think, you know, I think Jesse and I both have a part of our audience that loves still buys CDs. It still listens to albums as a whole, that, you know, but then of course there is a whole segment of the population who are coming up now who don't and aren't interested in albums and stuff. So I think that really it has to come from the artist. Like, if you need to make an album because that's the statement, I think you just make it.
Yeah.
I don't think you necessarily, you know, I realize that the concept of an album was actually a marketing concept in the beginning. Like, you know, let's package a thing that can be more expensive than the song that everybody wants. But but I think it's been turned into its own art form that I really love. And I wouldn't say that every song that I write, and I won't speak for Jesse, but I mean, not every song belongs on an album. And it's really nice actually these days to have the ability to release those, like, quote, you know, orphan songs as their own thing, and they can live in their own world. And then also when you have a statement to make that's larger than one song, I'm about to put out a solo record next in February, and it's an album, and it's a concept, and it had to be that album, you know. But then there's other, and then this Kivalina album as well, I feel like it had to be this group of songs,
yeah,
to be effective. But yeah, I don't think there's like a right or wrong that applies to all of the music industry.
Yeah, anymore.
You know,
is there outside pressure to just pump out singles, or do you feel like, you know what? Look, this is my work. I'm going to group these things together in album form, and maybe even put a, you know, with this, for example, with this EP, where there's an overall concept, grouping the songs together, making audiences want to buy the longer form things. What are your considerations as you go into releasing new music?
Well, yeah, I think like Alex said, it's nice to have the options, you know, like, I mean, even if you go in and record 15 songs at a time, maybe five of those songs are on like a B-sides EP, or they just live in the digital world, and 10 of those go on a CD and a vinyl record. It's nice to have that option, and hopefully to have things do well on all the different formats. So people that consume music on Spotify, you know, there's people consuming music on vinyl, CD, like it's great when it all works. But I think it comes down to the quality of the work, and just the passion of the work. So I've been really focusing as much as I can on being an artist, again, and not focusing quite as much on the business side of things. Of course, like, I just recorded a new record in September, and we're just about to like get together and talk about like what the marketing plan is and what the release plan is for that. Cause we'll release, we'll create a bunch of content, video, you know, do some videos, you know, plan to have singles released and stuff. So we'll still be releasing singles and stuff next year. But the plan is to release a full album, you know, and to have everything that goes along with that, vinyl and CDs and t-shirts and that album release tour and stuff. I still really dig that, you know, and I think it's cool to have that body of work, especially if you're really, really proud of it. And it's great. It's cool to have album reviews, and it's cool to have, it's just, I think that's still really relevant, and that's what I dig. But I'm kind of a throwback.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, I'm glad to hear that the traditions are superseding the move from physical media over to digital media.
There's still like tons of albums coming out. You know what I mean? There's so much. There's more music coming out than ever before. There's more music being consumed than ever before. So, I still think, but I really do think it comes down to the quality of the work, and you know, there is some luck involved, and there's a lot of showing up involved, but I'm just getting back to just trying to be as good as I can be as an artist, and to grow as much as I can as an artist. You know, I think the success will come from that.
Yeah.
Right. What's next for you, Alex? What do you have planned on the horizon? What do we have to look forward to?
So I split my time with my artist stuff, and I also produce. I'm a record producer for other artists, so I've been working on a few releases with some other bands that are coming out soon. I'm making a record with this band Delta Ray that's coming out in March, I think, next year, And then I am releasing my next solo album in February next year, February 21st. And so I'll be doing some touring for a lot of next year, and just kind of trying to give this album as much of a life as it can have.
Are there any plans to do further collaborations? I know, Jesse, you just also worked with Lizanne Knott on your 2018 yeah. Sunset Avenue Sessions album. Lizanne Knott, I discovered her through Mike Farley, your manager.
Yeah, and, he's great.
Yeah, he is great. In fact, I want to thank him right here and now, because so much of the music that I've been playing on my show has come from him, including you guys.
Oh, my.
Including Michael McDermott, so many others, Brian Lissick, and of course Lizanne Knott. Yeah. And are you planning any collaborations on the horizon, or what do you have going on in the coming year?
Yeah, there's a possibility of a really exciting collaboration that may or may not happen. So I don't want to mention it. I'm playing it cool anyway. Like, you know, I'm not trying to pressure the other person. I really love writing by myself. Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, those are my best songs, except for some of these songs with Alex and maybe a couple other artists like Michael Logan, some different people that I've written, I think, really well with in the past. But there's something about collaborating and doing like a project with someone that, mm-hmm. that seems to bring something different out of me. Although this did not start out as Alex and I saying, hey, let's get together and write a concept EP about this village. Like, we just wrote one song, then it just turned into six, you know, like it was a very organic, natural thing. And I love that, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
of course, it's always fun collaborating with Alex and other people that inspire you, people that maybe bring something different to the table than you would do, in some way. And it expands you and it inspires you in a really wonderful way.
Do you enjoy being on the on tour? You've got a 15-month-old, so I'm sure this particular tour is going to be, is it going to be more difficult this time around because you've got your family waiting back home? Or are they going with you?
No, yeah, the family, it's always been that way. Almost every tour, not all the overseas tours, because my wife has a mobile job, but mm-hmm. But yeah, I tour with my family almost all the time, like almost exclusively. So Lily's been on tour since like 3 months old, and of course she was on tour the whole time she was in the womb. So like she tends to sleep better in the car, and she loves being at the shows, like, you know, before her bedtime. And this is just something that's very
backstage. She insists on only red M&Ms backstage. Is that
exactly insisting? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, lately we just had to like she's getting really strong, you know, and like like we just have to like physically restrain her from like climbing on stage. Like, she's not. She came in on stage the other night and just waved to the whole crowd, and everyone just like went bonkers, you know. And
she loved
it. She just absolutely loved it. She wasn't afraid. She just loves it. And so she's been a riot. And our dog comes on tour with us, and it's a little different touring with the Terrys, you know.
Well, I gotta tell you, it's been an absolute pleasure to finally get to talk to both of you. I am so grateful to be able to play your work on my show, and I intend to play the hell out of Kivalina, because I think this is such a crucial, important project. There's a way that music, as I was saying before, music can cut through all the bullshit and get right to the emotional core, I think, of the crisis itself.
Amen.
Can't thank you both enough for making this album, for making this EP. And thank you for your time.
Thanks
today.
So
really,
much, Bob.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob. Yeah.
Someday, my love, the wave will come ashore, and we won't have to hold on anymore. Oh, you'll fly away on the wings of a bird. You won't have to say a word, I'll know. And all that's been broken will return to the ocean have to pretend that what we've built will outlast the end. Oh, we're woven in time to this ill-fated land. And now I understand.
This is Ryan Knight, and if you've enjoyed this podcast, you're going to love my podcast, Amped Up with Proud Resister, where we dive deep into progressive issues, Trump's crimes.
And we have great guests like Rosie O'Donnell, Rob Reiner, and Malcolm Nance.
You're such a name dropper.
Oh, you know.
So come on and join us at Amped Up with Proud Resister on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network.